Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. We start the second half of 2020 on a wet note. Now, make that a note of get wet, you win. That's the Prime Burlock Cannonball, USA Network's new water-minded obstacle contest. Executive producer Brady Schaefer joins me next. Racist Trees is one of the most controversial series pilots in series fest history. It's the unscripted pilot winner this year and depicts a side of Palm Springs few outside city limits have ever known. In our next half hour, we'll catch up with producer Sarah Newman. Also ahead, Conan's new home, The Great Goes Forward, are up on an AFI Ready Room grad, and we honor the TV comedy genius of Carl Reiner and the overall genius of Hugh Downs. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book and much more when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Thank you all for being with us on this first episode of the second half of 2020. And I'm sorry to tell you that about 40 minutes ago, we learned that Hugh Downs, the venerable co-anchor of 2020, and before that, the host of such shows as Concentration, Over Easy, The Today Program, and more, passed away yesterday at the age of 99. We just got that word 40 minutes ago, and during the last half hour of our show, we will pay honor to him, as well as to Carl Reiner. So we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts about both Hugh Downs and Carl Reiner, both of whom had incredible careers on television from first day to last? We'd like to hear from you, and we'd like you also to pay attention to our guests today over the next hour. Got some good ones for you, and we invite you to be part of the program. So all you have to do is pick up the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. If you're shy about the phone, it's never the problem with us. All you got to do is use our chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, you are involved. And while the program is on the air, you can get to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. 90 degrees at the top of the hour, and Brady Schaefer from Cannonball, which had a great pre-USA debut on NBC Monday night. He'll be with us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. The days of Conan O'Brien originating his nightly TBS show from home will come to an end next week. Starting Monday, O'Brien will move to the Hollywood nightclub Largo at the Conan in Los Angeles. He'll interview guests remotely via Zoom, and at first will have no live audience. O'Brien has been homebound since March when the coronavirus pandemic forced the shutdown of most TV production facilities and encouraged most late-night talk show hosts to go the distance from home. Hulu has opted for a second season of The Great, its satire scripted take on Catherine the Great. Ellie Fanning and Nicholas Holt will return as co-stars, and 10 new episodes will be filmed. Executive producer Marion McGowan was on Tomorrow Be Televised last month, and you can hear this episode on replay and podcast, tell you how later in the program. And now some quickies before our first guest. The Kominsky Method from Netflix is coming back for a third and final season. Phineas and Ferb, the movie, will premiere August 28th on Disney+. Home and Garden Television will start 2021 in part with a new six-hour miniseries, Rehab Addict Rescue. Jeff Foxworthy will return next month to TV with What's It Worth, a collectible series for A&E. Start date, August 4th. Lower Decks, the much-anticipated Star Trek Although 2 Voyage, that sail August 6th on CBS All Access. It takes place in 2380, that year, with the USS Cerritos, the home ship. Roku is the latest smart TV set and device, the C Interactive Fitness Hangout Peloton. And the Screen Actors Guild will hold its 2021 awards in March, 2 months later than before. You need to tell them in late January, and it will be simulcast on TBS and TNT. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from Los Angeles in Inner Radio Exclusive, one of the executive producers of Cannonball, coming to USA Network 1 week from tonight, Brady Schaefer. Brady, thank you for coming on.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. Bernie, first of all, you got the your program got the special screening on NBC Monday night. Did very, very well. So what's the mood among you and your crew about it?
Oh, we're all very excited about that. It's been a long, long journey to get it on the screen, and just have it on, watching it on NBC was fantastic. Everybody really, really enjoyed it. It was a well-needed party for everyone, because it's been we shot it back in the fall last year, so we've been waiting a long time to get it to have our audience and have everybody to watch it.
In fact, it was almost a year ago that USA Network announced that Cannonball would be a series, would star The Miz, the very popular World Wrestling Entertainment star. How did Cannonball come about?
Well, Cannonball is a original Tau format legend. John DeMaul created the show. It's been on air in the UK. It's been on air in Australia. And so this is the first iteration of the show in the US, and it took a little bit of time to get over here. But as soon as USA gave us the green light, we were ready to mount our Cannonball US version, which is what we've been working on for almost a year and a half now.
If you didn't see it on NBC Monday night, this is one of those, you might say, larger-than-life-size obstacle courses that have become a television staple in the United States for the last 10, 15 years. Shows like Wipeout, more recently Holy Moly, now Holy Moly 2. I'm curious, is this kind of show very popular in England and other parts of the world?
I think it is, I think that certainly there's been uptakes and downtakes for these kinds of shows, but I think ultimately, especially in this kind of time, people want to be entertained, right? People want to be have fun, and people want to have fun with their families. And I think that's the key to this kind of programming is being able to watch something with your family, sitting down in front of the TV with your kids or your extended family, and just being able to enjoy it together. And I think that's one of the key elements that we're seeing, certainly here in the US, certainly with shows like this, and other shows that are co-viewing. I think that's super important, but also really that's how I remember watching it when I was a kid, was watching it with my parents. So I think it's something that everybody taps into, and I think some do it better than others, but touch wood, luckily I think we've hit on the right kind of balance for ours as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're with ITV Entertainment, which is the co-producer of Cannonball, with Type of Media, headed by John DeMaul. That's the man who created, among other things, a little hit called Deal or No Deal, which became a worldwide phenomenon, and was also on NBC for a number of years, and then more recently on CNBC. Is this the first time you've worked with John, and what kind of a person is he in terms of coming up with unique ideas for game shows or competition shows?
Well, I mean, look, John is his legend. It precedes anything that I could say. The unique thing is that these shows seem to sell across the world, don't they? And that's one of the fantastic things, that there's an element there that everybody can see and everybody wants to. I think that's pretty magical. The person I worked with the most here in the Talpa US section was Stein Backers, who is one of John's men, and so he brought about all of the same kind of influences that I guess John would have on the day to day. So it was a real collaboration between us from the moment that we were pitching it to the moment of developing, and then throughout production, it was a very collaboration between the two groups.
Cannonball, which is the brand new USA Network competition series hosted by The Miz and did very well Monday night with a preview special on NBC. It premieres 1 week from tonight on USA Network at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. And we've got one of the executive producers of the show with us live from Los Angeles, Bernie Schaefer. He is with us this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Coming up, I'm with you live from New York. Happy to have you with us. 90 degrees at the top of the hour, one of the hottest days of the year so far in New York. And elsewhere around the country, too. If you have a question or a comment for Bernie, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will be coming to you an hour earlier. That's an hour earlier than usual. That's 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. We have a big 90-minute show ahead for you. First up, we will get into a brand-new project called the Latinx List. It's a new way for Latino writers and producers to get into the television field. It's a project involving Hulu, the National Association of Latino Independent Producers, and the organization we've been trying to end this program for the last couple of years, the Blacklist. That's the organization that provides screenplays and TV scripts for sale to producers who want to get them going and on the screen. We will have Ben Lopez, the executive director of NAAIP, and the founder and organizer of the Blacklist in a rare live interview anywhere, Franklin Leonard. That's just the first half hour. And then in our second half hour, you'll meet the executive producer of a brand new series called Plus Life, Brett Zaki and Mike Spear. Their series premieres next week on Localish. That's the popular channel organized by the ABC-owned television stations. And finally, from ABC's new popular Thursday night game show, Don't. Put together by Ryan Reynolds, executive producer David Goldberg. It should be a dandy 90 minutes. We'll have it all for you live. That's Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Check the special start time Monday here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. How did John Bernie come up with the idea of Cannonball?
I am not sure how John came up with that idea. I'm sure he had, he was probably, you know, on spring break somewhere, and it just occurred to him that what more fun can you have than throwing people into a body of water from great heights? But look, I think what was really cool was trying to figure out what the U.S. version of Cannonball was, you know, and that took quite some time over at USA were, you know, instrumental at figuring that out. And I think Cannonball in Europe finished in 2017, I believe. So it's been a while. And the show that we have here is very different US market. And I think, during our development period and during production, we just worked really closely with USA to figure out and find what our show was going to be, and that's where we've landed.
Now, in this version, you have 16 people, 16 contestants each episode. There are four rounds. People are living each round, depending on how they do in a particular water obstacle, and then of course the winner gets the opportunity to go for a cash prize. What are some of the obstacles that these contestants face every week?
Well, every week they're going to be facing different obstacles in our Cannonball Bay scenario. And I think again, like I said earlier, one of the most intriguing aspects of this show was really coming up with these challenges. And coming up with challenges that would really challenge our contestants and our athletes to not just their physical abilities but their mental abilities as well. Because you know what, getting up on that seventh slide I went up there at the beginning of production, it's a scary place to be. And just looking down on you start to get butterflies. Just think about, oh my gosh, am I going to do this? Would I step into this? And so, you know, that's part of the design element of all these challenges is the fear factor, am I going to step into this? Am I going to do this? And each challenge is different, and each challenge has a different physical attribute and psychological attribute. We have you know, the main, the centerpiece of the of our bet is the big slug, and that's that that has a couple of different versions as well. You know, we can send someone off that slide and propel them straight up into the air and see how far people fly in the air. Or we can drop the slide down to the water surface level and have them skim across the water to see how far they can skim through the water and dodging obstacles. And I think, you know, what one of the key things is changing that big feature, changing that big centerpiece so that we could get the most out of it. And I think we did really, really well to do that because the challenges are very different. And then on the sides, we had different challenges, like the Savage Swing, which was really good fun. Basically, a huge pendulum taken up by a crane, where the contestants have to grab onto the pendulum, swing into the water, and then throw themselves at a target, and the closest person to that target, you know, wins or gets through to the next round. So it was really a bunch of different, very different challenges that would test you in very different ways.
Mm-hmm. Bernie, when viewers see a program like this, or like Cannonball, or Holy Moly, which are the outsized obstacles with, you know, lots of water or a lake or sand or whatever involved, what normally comes to mind in terms of a question is, how do you design these obstacles? How long does it take to build them, and how long does it take to, you know, have other games ready to go in case something goes wrong with the taping? What's it like for you and your production team to physically put these obstacles together and then have the contestants use them?
It's a great question, Simon. I mean, look, the design process and the development of the challenges is key, and really, as soon as we had the go-ahead, that's the first thing that started, right? So we had a design team in-house basically just churning out different ideas and formulating different plans of what we could do in the space that we were looking at. And especially like in an oversized arena like this one. And it was very much what can we do that's different? What can we do that people haven't seen yet? What can we do that is fun and shows different aspects of these challenges, and also, you know, something that excites the viewers, because there's definitely an element, even though it's oversized, there's definitely an element where you look at these things and you're like, oh man, I really wish I could have a go because it looks fun. For example, there's a challenge called Blast Off, and I remember the guys, in the office, kind of doing preliminary drawings of Blast Off, which is basically a huge hose pipe with, you know, very strong water coming rushing through it, and you have to hold on to this pipe and to a ball for dear life as it thrashes you around the air. And I said to the guys, I said, how can we do this? And they all, well, we'll work that out. We'll work out the science. First of all, we come up with the idea. Then we'll work out the science, and then we'll work out how to build it. And so it's a process. It's a process that starts with the idea, then continues into how do you physically make it, and then production to make it. So that whole process does take some time. Was, you know, we started back in, I guess, back in August, you know, July last year, the first initial designs before pitching them to our friends at USA, and then eventually being in production in late October. So that's, you know, part of the development is working out how to build these things. And then once you get onto the set, then it's exactly as you say. You know, you have to, we have to schedule things very, very methodically so that we, A, give enough time to test these, some of these new challenges that we may have not done before. And if we learn things, we need to adjust, be able to adjust. And so the production schedule allows for that testing and tweaking. And, you know, the producers are very cleverly, what they do is make sure that we have enough time that if in case something isn't working out the way we want it to work out, we can throw something else in and then tweak that challenge that needs a bit more time until we find a solution.
Bernie Schaefer, executive producer of the new U.S. Network series Cannonball, is with us this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell Live. Cannonball premieres 1 week from tonight on the USA Network at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, hosted by The Miz himself. And we'll talk about The Miz and the person who co-hosts with him shortly. If you have a question or comment, remaining minutes with Bernie, who's live with us from Los Angeles this half hour, make the call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, 7Apple04 by name. Coming up before the bottom of the hour, Classic Trivia Question of the Week. Stay tuned. You could be our latest winner, but you got to pay attention and then play in for the win. Bernie, what was it like working with The Miz? You get a sense off the commercials you see on the promo spots that he had a blast doing this show.
I mean, you know, the thing about Mike is that what you see on the screen is exactly what you see in real life. And that's such a, you know, such a great feeling, such a nice feeling to have when you meet someone for the first time. You may have seen him on lots of different shows and the wrestling, and then you get to meet him, and you know, Mike is exactly the way he is, and very humble guy as well. So I had a really great time meeting him, and you know, he brings that energy, right? He brings such a fantastic energy. And what was really amazing for me was when he first turned up to set, and his eyes lit up. And he said, you know, wow, this is the real deal. So I think that was really neat for me because, you know, Mike has done some big stuff too. So his astonishment when he stepped on the set was palpable, and everybody got a real good kick out of that. And Roxy too, you know, Roxy right next to him, she brings another kind of energy and they had a lot of fun. I think seeing our contestants and our athletes, like, you know, really challenge themselves and be put through their paces in those 3 weeks. I think they fed off that energy. They fed off that entertainment, and they really brought their A game. And I think it's easy when exactly as you say, they were enjoying themselves, and that makes it so much easier.
Rosie, by the way, for those who don't know, is Rosie Diaz. A lot of you who are BET fans know her as the long-running host, co-host of 106 at Park, which won her an Emmy Award, by the way, for work on that show. She also is on Entertainment Tonight, done some other things as well. And this is the first time she's done a show like this. In all of her years as a host or a co-host, this is the first for her to do a game show.
Yeah, right. And she, you know, as soon as we had her with Mike for the first time, we just did like a run through in the office, and she gave as good as she got. And Mike just, you could tell there was that instant kind of connection there where they could joke with each other, and it seemed like they knew each other. And that's, I mean, that's the most you could ask for. And so they were able to really fill in the gaps. You know, Roxy does have to do a lot of the, you know, managing of what's going on and who, what, which contestant's gone through to the which round, or who's coming up. And so between them, they were a great balance for the show.
How do you hope, we only recommend two left, how do you hope viewers will catch the show? What would you like them to enjoy the most about the series?
I think from what I said at the beginning, I just love the fact that, and a lot of our producers, a lot of our people that have worked on the show, they've been watching the cuts as we've been finishing them. They've been watching it with their families. And what, you know, every single person comes to me and they say, you know what, my teenager was laughing at this bit and I didn't even know that bit was funny, but I'm laughing at the other bit. So I think the element of that co-viewing and the element of coming to it in slightly different points of view, it really excites me. I think that's what I would love to see our audience finding, is that they can watch it with their families, with their kids, or with their, you know, grandparents, and they can all take something out of it. And I think that would be that would be fantastic.
Cannonball, hosted by Ms. Rocio Diaz, premieres 1 week from tonight on USA Network, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Check your local listings for USA is available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.usanetwork.com and www.usanetwork.com. Cannonball, next Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Bernie Schaefer, one of the executive producers of the program for ITV Entertainment, one of the two co-producing companies of the program. Thank you for joining us. Congrats on the NBC Sneak Preview Monday night. Good luck with the premiere next week and hopefully the beginning of a great long run for your series.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Same here, buddy. Take care. Have a wonderful July 4th weekend.
Cheers. You too.
Bernie Schaefer, executive producer of Cannonball, joining us live from Los Angeles. Our opportunity question of the week, get ready, you could win, but first some words from our fine friends at Audible.com. If you are still looking for something great to spend time this July 4th holiday weekend on, how about giving yourself or someone you love a trial run, a one-month trial run with Audible.com? And if you're looking for a great, great book that you want to enjoy or your way, how about this one from the former first lady herself, Michelle Obama? It's her bestseller, Becoming. That can be yours with a one-month trial to Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 180,000 titles to choose from. You listen on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, or iHeartRadio. All you have to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook of your choice. You also, for a limited time, can get wonderful wellness material and, as well, your choice of great newspaper to read on a daily basis. That's right, newspaper reading on a regular basis. It all comes with 1 month trial, plus great customer service to find folks at Audible's parents, Amazon.com. And get this, your free book could also be one of the growing catalog of Audible originals. That's original audio productions, also great One Woman, One Man performances, as well as the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater. So how about making this July 4th celebration of our nation and what it's up to current and future, how about making that the time you discover for yourself, or some of you know, how Audible.com can transform the way you or they can hear the world. For that one-month trial, make sure you make that call, or make sure you go to that website, audibletrial.com/televised. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. We've had the question since the start of the week on Monday. If you're first with the correct answer, A Very English Scandal, the book by John Preston that was inspiring the award-winning miniseries last year starring Hugh Grant, can be yours. And also, we've got episodes of the popular Nat Geo Wild series Fish Tank Kings on CD for you. If you know the answer to this question, name the first television series executive produced by Greg Berlanti, one of the uber mega stars in the world of TV series entrepreneurship. I'll give you a hint. He did. This was his first series more than 20 years ago, and it was on one of the networks that later became the CW. Again, the question, name the first TV series executive produced by Greg Berlanti. Name the first TV series executive produced by Greg Berlanti. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full mailing address. And if you're first with the correct answer, you win. And if you missed the question a moment ago, we'll try to repeat it before the end of the program. If not, then catch tomorrow, first day of Friday, my Facebook page, Simon Apple Bound by Name, or go to Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so, and all the very best. When we come back, we will showcase a very unique, unscripted winner of this year's Series Fest 2020 Independent Pilot Competition. The pilot is called Racist Trees. The producer is named Sarah Newins. You will hear her live from Los Angeles after you pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and TuneIn.com. Together, reach over 45 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio will present a variety of great programming for your July 4th holiday weekend pleasure. Everything from live coverage of events to live fireworks coverage, live sports, all sorts of great talk programming, music programming, you name it. So check it out every day starting tomorrow on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio's July 4th Independence Day weekend programming. You will not be bored. In fact, you'll be entertained to the max. And don't forget, that's VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll have a live night edition coming your way on this Thursday afternoon, day before the July 4th holiday weekend officially kicks up. 90 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Hottest day of the year here. Very sunny, very warm, very bright, very humid. We're delighted to have you with us wherever you're catching us on Blog Talk Radio, TuneIn Radio, and Spreaker. Another big guest coming away in this half hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. So all you got to do is pick up the phone and make the call. 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up later this hour, an up segment about one of the people who graduated from the American Film Institute's Writers' Ready Room, who just had a big breakthrough happen that was announced this morning. We'll give you the details. And then coming up after the top of the next hour, we'll have our tribute to two giants of television who passed away this week, Carl Reiner on the comedy side, and on the overall side, Hugh Downs, the former co-actor of 2020. His credits include Over Easy, Concentration, Today, Cooper, Fran, and Ally, Home, much more, Jack Park Show as a sidekick, and so much more. He passed away yesterday at the age of 99. Carl Reiner passed away Monday night at the age of 98. So if you have questions, if you have comments, want to pay tribute, use that phone number, use our chat room. We want to hear from you. But right now, we're going to hear from another one of the winners of SiriFest 2020's Independent Pilot Competition. Back on Monday, we brought you the winner of the Best Drama Pilot called The Story of You and the threesome that did the pilot in comedy that won Everyone Together. The first time since we've done these SiriFest wrap-ups, we're going to bring you the unscripted pilot winner. And it is as timely and as controversial as any pilot that's been in a television competition anywhere in these United States. It's called Racist Trees. And joining us now live from Los Angeles to talk about it is its creator and producer, Sarah Nguyen. Sarah, congratulations. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much.
It is a pleasure. This is a pilot, and I think one of the reasons why it did so well, and it won not only for the pilot, but for you as well, as best director in the unscripted category, was because it was an eye-opener. It was as timely as it can get, and it dealt with a topic that, frankly, if you weren't in Palm Springs, I guess Palm Springs, California, you had no clue this was happening.
Yes. It was much a surprise to me as probably a lot of people, and I'm not even that far away. I live in Los Angeles, but I really enjoy escaping the city and going to the desert, and first heard about this in The Desert Sun through some really wonderful investigative journalism by a reporter named Corinne Kennedy, who really shed light on this in late 2017, right at the beginning of, well, sorry, not at the beginning, but right as the fight to remove this row of tamarisk trees, this row of invasive trees was reignited in the community.
Mm-hmm. Explain to the audience what Racist Trees stands for, and how did you find out about this situation in the first place?
Well, it is certainly a grabbing title because we really ripped it from the headlines. As I said, it began most recently in an article in the Desert Sun and caught my attention. But the larger media outlets also caught wind because of the controversial nature of, really a benign object being a symbol for racial discrimination. And so there was quite a media firestorm. It got picked up by, New York Times, Politico, Breitbart. It was on, Tucker Carlson was doing segments on it and calling it, Racist Trees. So that is where the name came from, and it really is about this very small community in Palm Springs that has been there since the late 1950s, before people of color, specifically, you know, black people and communities of color weren't allowed to live within the city limits. And so over the years, this community became incorporated in part of Palm Springs, but was still very separate by this row of trees that are 60 feet tall, and they happen to line the 14th fairway of a city-owned golf course. And so, you know, since pretty much the 1960s, this community has been hidden and has wanted these trees removed. And the city has really, you know, previously had not been paying much attention to these requests.
Mm-hmm. Before you tackled this subject, did you get in touch with the reporter who broke the story locally? Were there any other people that you went to before you said, okay, count me in, I'm doing this?
Yes, I mean, that was the first stop was, you know, I read Corinne's article and reached out to her immediately because it just seemed like a very visual story. And I was so curious to see these trees in person. And she had done some really extensive research and talked with many people in the community, people who lived in the Lawrence Crosley neighborhood, as well as people who lived across the 14th Fairway in the Mountain Shadows neighborhood, which is, you know, looks at the trees on the other side, which faces the trees from the other direction. You know, she also spoke with city council members and the city manager and, you know, a historical society. So, you know, we really started wanting to follow in her footsteps, essentially, and get a sense of, you know, what was going on and what efforts were being made now after many decades of trying. And it was really one community member, one resident who was leading the charge, who was a white activist named Trey Daniel. And he we thought it was so interesting that it was sort of when the neighborhood started to gentrify and some white people started speaking, white residents started speaking up, that the city council also started to perk up their ears as well.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, Sarah, who planted the trees? Is this a case of like an Augusta National Golf Club situation where the golf club itself or the golf club's members planted the trees, or were these trees planted by someone from the outside, and it just happened to be along the lines of a fairway of a golf course?
I mean, that's very much the debate and the mystery that we are in search of, you know. There is no, you know, bill of sale or, you know, there's no paperwork that you can really trace to say explicitly who planted the trees and why they were planted. And so that is definitely part of our mission in making this. And we've interviewed several people who have different theories around that. And, you know, there's even been some photos that the Historical Society dug up that some people see as evidence that they were not planted by the city, and others disagree. So that's partly what makes this story so interesting to follow, is that, you know, there is this desire to have some sort of concrete proof that these trees were or were not planted with the intent to discriminate. And, you know, ultimately, I don't think it really matters. I think that there's a community who says they feel discriminated against and that there should be some acknowledgement of that.
We're speaking with Sarah Nguyen. She's the producer director of Racist Trees, the SiriusXM 2020 independent pilot winner for unscripted programming. She not only won for the special for her pilot, she won as well for herself as Best Director in that category. And Simon's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. Thank you for joining us on this day before we all get together for July 4th holiday weekend. I hope it's a great one for you and yours wherever you are. And thank you for tuning us in on this July 2, second day of the second half of 2020. If a question or comment for Sarah, or make the call and be known, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, Monday, our next episode, another night edition, begins an hour earlier than normal. That's 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. We'll talk about a special project in our first half hour called the Latinx List. It involves Hulu, the National Association of Latino Independent Producers, and the Blacklist, the organization that has brought many an award-winning screenplay and now some TV episodes to life. My guest will be, from NAIP, Executive Director Ben Lopez, and in a rare live interview, one of the few he has given in the last couple of years, the founder and owner of the Blacklist himself, Franklin Leonard. This is a half hour you do not want to miss, because the Blacklist has been working on a lot of projects to try to expand diversity on television. This is just the latest. I believe the first one that involves a programming service such as Hulu. Also, we will have the executive producer of a new series starting next week on Localish. That is the multicast channel and smart TV service from the ABC-owned television station. Brent Zaki and Mike Spier from Plus Life. And finally, from the popular new ABC game show, it's on tonight, I believe at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, called Dope, from Ryan Reynolds, executive producer David Goldberg. All Monday, special time, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow will be televised. Sarah, once you got going with this, particularly given the fact that finding a paper trail was an almost impossible task, it sounds like, how long did it take to put this special together, and what kind of cooperation or non-cooperation did you get from the parties?
Well, as independent filmmakers, we have a small team, and we all have full-time jobs. So this has very much been a passion project that's taken some time to put together. And even now, you know, we're thrilled to be able to, premiere at a place like Series Fest. Well, actually, we were going to premiere at South by Southwest in the episodic pilot competition, but that was canceled this year due to COVID. So we were thrilled to have an opportunity to be part of the online festival at Series Fest. But it is only the pilot. You know, we still have, we still hope, I should say, to make a full series of 4 to 5 episodes. So, so it's been a scrappy pursuit thus far. But in terms of cooperation, I think, you know, everyone we've approached so far within the community has been, you know, willing to speak with us and wanting to get this, really wanting to get give the story in the community some exposure. I think that was largely why Corinne Kennedy took time to write such an in-depth article, and it worked. It got the attention of a lot of media. So by the time we came in and started filming, there was obviously already a lot of eyeballs on this community and the story and the local city council. So we were able to speak with them as well. And we are hoping to also do some follow-up interviews now that it has been some time since, spoiler alert, the trees came down.
I want to go back to the trees in a moment, but how helpful was Corinne and her work in terms of you and your production team getting, let's say, a framework, a foundation to build your episodes around, or at least build this pilot around?
I mean, you know, she was crucial. She's very integral to gaining access. I mean, the most important thing for any documentary film is, you know, gaining access and building trust. And in a sense, Corinne had already established that with the community, and we were fortunately able to, become allies through her and also look to a lot of her leads. And again, retrace a lot of her steps you know, in terms of how to tell the story. But of course, you know, within our own, through our own lens and with, you know, a visual medium like documentary film, there's a more exciting way to tell. I shouldn't say exciting, but there's a different approach to telling this kind of story. And, you know, we really wanted to use, you know, we wanted to approach it with a different tone that felt slightly lighthearted so that it was sort of easier, an easier entry point for an audience to talk about difficult subject matter.
Mm-hmm. How do you do that? How do you try to, while addressing the issue, make it semi-satirical, semi-humorous, this is all about a group of trees along the fairway of a golf course. How do you do it without overdoing the satire or making it over-ponderous?
That's a great question. I think it took, at least for the pilot, it definitely took some experimentation and showing it to a trusted audience that could help us navigate where if and when it crossed the line. We also shared it with the community, some of the community members who were featured in the pilot, to see how they felt about the portrayal of and representation of the events. You know, it's a delicate balance of trying to, find that sort of lighthearted entry point, but also be able to touch on, you know, the real depths of the racist history in this community, but is really a microcosm for communities all over the country.
Mm-hmm. What do each side or each of the parties involved want? What does the African-American community want in Palm Springs? What does other community, what do they want? Is there middle ground somewhere?
Well, I can certainly say that I think the heart of the issue is that these trees are suppressing property values in this community. And to many people, both in the Lawrence Crosley neighborhood and outside of the Lawrence Crosley neighborhood, really feel that that is an injustice, considering how the property values continue to rise in the rest of the city. It's a very desirable place to live or have a second home. And so, you know, one of the ways that the wealth gap has been sustained in our country, you know, is through this lack of inherited wealth for a lot of African-American communities and communities of color. So I think they, you know, quite frankly, want an opportunity to build the same, you know, to gain wealth, accrue wealth through their property values. And if the trees come down, then they have a golf course view. They have a mountain view. There's a way that they are more included. You know, it's a more inclusive way of being in this community.
You're hearing Sarah Nguyen. She is the creator, producer, director of Racist Trees. That's the Series Fest 2020 winner for Unscripted TV Pilot. She won for directing. The pilot won in the Unscripted category for program. And Sarah is joining us live this half hour from Los Angeles on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sarah, I'm with you live from New York. Thank you for joining us on this 2nd of July 2020. You have a question or comment or many minutes with Sarah? Well, get on the phone and make something happen. 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Before we get back, two things. First of all, if you missed our episode Monday featuring the drama and comedy pilot winners of Series Fest 2020, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, to check out that episode. We're getting a lot of replay action on it. We thank you for that. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Or check it out on podcast at iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker podcast app, TuneIn.com, or iHeartRadio.com. With the latter two websites, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, then make the click and make it happen. Also, coming up right after this, We will have our latest Up segment as an update. We catch up on guests and topics on this program. And not so long ago, we showcased the American Film Institute's Writers' Ready Room. We had one of the graduates of that room on our program. Something big happened to her that was announced earlier today. We'll tell you about that shortly, so stay tuned for that. And don't forget, in our next half hour, we'll pay tribute to the careers, the big careers, the Carl Reiner and Hugh Downs. And you'll have an opportunity to contribute with your phone and chat room thoughts. So make sure it happens, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, sign Apple 04, and we'll get to that after the top of the hour. Sarah, when this was shown at Series Fest 2020, what kind of reaction did you get? Was a lot of it along the lines of, wow, how relevant is this, given all the protests, the rioting, the looting that we've been seeing over the last month around the country?
I think the reaction has been very positive, and it's certainly topical. I think what really interests our filmmaking team, particularly in this moment, is, how to examine what the dynamics are, what these racial dynamics are in some more liberal pockets of America, because oftentimes, there's this fear around being labeled racist or called racist that is outweighs the fear of racism itself. And so, I think we're really interested in exploring, the layers of this and how it changes, depending on it can vary depending on the politics of the community that you're in. But there are certainly so many layers to all of this, and that's part of the reason why this has become, this moment has been such a lightning rod for these conversations.
Have you got any nibbles since Series Fest from programming services that would like to not only take the pilot, but like, as you want, expand this into a series?
Not a ton at the moment. I think what makes this particular project hard is that we were initially developing this as a short form series, so every episode is under 15 minutes, and there aren't very many platforms right now that are exploring that length, and so I think we initially imagined this potentially living online, but at this point we're hoping, because it is so topical, to gain some traction with some larger streamers, or really find a good partner to help us fully realize a story that has all the layers we think, are possible.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular programming service that you think would be the most ideal to get on?
No, I actually don't have an ideal partner. I think there's many places where this kind of story, could live. And we also are, reevaluating exactly how to package it at the moment. And Series Fest is an opportunity to start having more conversations with people who can help us determine what the best format for this story is.
If it does say short form, you should know that there are a number of smart TV programming services that are specializing in short form. Shorts TV is one, which has carried some of the Oscar-nominated shorts in recent years. So it's available on most smart TV sets and smart devices, and I'm sure there's some other ones too. While you wait for a decision whether you will take this into a series, are you working on any other projects right now? What's next for you?
I just completed a feature documentary where I served as editor and writer for a film directed by Kirby Dick and Amy Ziering called On the Record, which premiered recently on HBO Max. It was actually the first original documentary acquired by them, by their new platform. So that has been a big part of my life for the last year and a half, and I'm really proud of it. And so I've, also needed a bit of a break before hopping onto anything else, but so the focus is definitely racist trees right now.
Yeah. Finally, Sarah, what has this experience taught you as a possible maker of TV series, whether unscripted or scripted? What has it taught you about how to approach subjects, how to turn them into compelling television?
That's a great question. I mean, I think that is something that we are figuring out. You know, my team, we all have experience making, you know, feature-length documentaries or short documentaries. And so this episodic format is very exciting. And I think partly the reason why we determined the length of the episodes to be around 10 or 15 minutes is as a way to get our feet wet in determining how to structure and how to shape the episodic storytelling from the outset, you know, and hopefully, you know, dip our toes in this kind of storytelling, because it is definitely not only very popular in the whole landscape right now, but also just the way that I enjoy to consume, you know, a lot of content that's out there.
The name of the pilot is Racist Trees, and it's about a situation that is still going on in Palm Springs, California. And it's this year's Series Fest 2020 Unscripted Pilot Winner, and it's independent pilot competition. By the way, congratulations to all 60-plus pilots in all the different categories that competed this year, as well as all the ones that submitted for being in that competition. If you want to see Racist Trees for yourself, here's where you can online, www.seriesfest.com. It's www.seriesfest.com. And while you're at it, check out the two pilots that we showcased on Monday's episode, The Story of You, that was the drama winner, and the comedy winner, Everyone Together. And we all hope that these pilots and others will hopefully become TV series down the road. Once again, www.seriesfest.com. Sarah Nguyen, the creator, producer, director of Racist Trees, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on the Series Fest 2020 win. I hope this does become a series. And if so, we would love to have you back on to find out how this impacts not only Palm Springs, California, but also what lessons the rest of the country can learn from what you're turning up.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're welcome, Sarah. Take care. Have a wonderful Independence Day weekend.
You too.
Sarah Nguyen, creator, producer, director of Racist Trees, the independent pilot competition winner for Best Unscripted Program at Series Fest 2020, joining us live from Los Angeles. And now it's time for Up as an Update, where we catch up on guests and topics we have had on this program. Back in May 22nd to be exact, we showcased another one of the growing number of efforts to try to expand diversity on television, the American Film Institute's 2020 Writers' Room, which has actually been around for 5 years, where writers of pilots that are really ready to become television series get the mentoring they need to, in fact, become TV series. One of the mentor that we had on the program was Latoya Morgan. Latoya was a graduate of that Writers' Ready Room program earlier in its run, and then she became involved with AMC. She became a writer for such programs as Turn, and more recently, she was one of the executive producers of the popular series Into the Badlands. Along the way at AMC, she also launched the Inclusive Initiative, where she worked with two writers, one of a comic book writer, to turn their promising pilots into series on AMC or elsewhere. Well, I'd like to tell you that earlier today, Warner Brothers announced that Morgan has formed her own production company, which will be working with WB on all sorts of projects, whether they're for HBO, HBO Max, TBS, TNT, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in addition, Morgan will also continue to work with AMC on a series that she is developing as an executive producer and writer, and also will continue to work with that Inclusive Initiative and those two writers. So congratulations to Latoya on her new role with a new production company in WB. We'll keep you posted about how she's doing. And if any of her shows become a series, we hope to have her back on this program in the near future. If you want to check out that episode on the Writers Ready Room, it was May 22nd of this year, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And also on that same episode, we have the creator executive producer of Hightown, Rebecca Cutter. The show is a winner. It's been renewed for a second season on Starz, and I believe that later this month, the final episode will be premiering, and it will lead into another new series called P-Valley that The Hollywood Reporter is also, and as already said, is one of this year's best on any network. We hope to have the creator executive producer of that series on our show in a future episode. We're working with Star on that. When we come back, we will pay tribute to two of the most incredible people that this medium ever had, Carl Reiner and Hugh Downs, and we'd love to hear from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, and we'll get to that after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker, and TuneIn.com, all reaching nearly 45 million listeners around the world every month together and growing. Remember that Coronavirus News Channel continues at this July 4th holiday weekend on TuneIn Radio. The latest news on the coronavirus pandemic, how it is doing throughout the world, plus podcasts and other original material. So check up on the latest news coverage with the Coronavirus News Channel. It will be operating live 24 hours and change throughout the July 4th holiday weekend. And don't forget, Block Talk Radio, Spreaker, and Tune Radio will bring you great holiday weekend programming starting tomorrow, so check your local listings for the programming coming your way, all original and many cases live, to spend your holiday weekend on right here on Block Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Welcome back tomorrow. Tomorrow we televise on this 90th edition of the Pro Roll About the Tube, our first one of July 2020, first one of the second half of this year. We welcome those of you joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. 90 very hot degrees here in the Big Apple at the top of the hour, and we are about to do something pretty special, which is to honor not one, but two giants of television, both of whom passed away this week. Carl Reiner, the comedy genius who passed away on Monday night, and if you haven't heard the news, Hugh Downs, the former co-anchor of the ABC News Magazine 2020, also the former host of the game show Concentration, the Today program in the 1960s and 70s, the PBS award-winning series Over Easy, and more, passed away yesterday at the age of 99. Reiner was 97. We're going to pay tribute to both of them over the course of the rest of this program, and we invite you to be involved. We'd like to hear from you about your thoughts about these two great geniuses of television. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe. You're on Block Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. You can also use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So be involved. We'd love to hear from you, and I think that the rest of the America and the world would love to hear from you, your thoughts about how these two marvelous people of television impacted your life, your humor, your funny bone, and your knowledge of the world. Let's start first with Carl Reiner. When it comes to comedy geniuses, nobody but nobody was like Carl Reiner. From first day to last, he was with it. He was as great a writer, a director, a producer, and just someone involved in the world of comedy, in television, in movies, anywhere, as anyone you could find. And when he passed away Monday night, he had his own Twitter feed. He was as much with it as anybody, and he was looking forward to what new things he could do the time he had left when he passed away at the age of 97, late Monday night. Reiner broke into the medium in the 1950s, and it was immediately apparent that he was multi-talented. He could write, he could direct, he could create, he could be the straight man. He could also be the sketch comedy star or co-star or sidekick. And he immediately proved that with people like Sid Caesar and Imogene Coca and Howard Morris and writers like Larry Gelbart, Lucille Cowan, and Woody Allen, first on your Show of Shows and then on Caesar's Hour, both on NBC. Your Show of Shows was the Saturday Night Live of its day, except it was in prime time, 90 minutes a week, and the first really funny sketch comedy show in TV history. And then after 4 years of that program, Reiner and company with Imogene Coca and Sid Caesar and Annette Favre moved on to Caesar's Hour, which had a 3-year run in prime time on NBC. You knew going in that Reiner could be very funny, could be a great straight man, and could be very hysterical. And one sketch on your Show of Shows showcased it all. It was a sketch that was, like many, a satire on a famous television show or movie. In this case, One of the most popular programs of the 1950s, TV's first decade, This Is Your Life, hosted by Rob Edwards. Yes, Reiner played the Ralph Edwards role, and Sid Caesar played the subject. And what nobody that night in the audience knew was that Caesar would be planted in an aisle seat in the audience. Nobody knew that the first part of the sketch was going to be done in the audience. And when you learn that Sid Caesar was in that audience, everybody in that theater laughed hysterically and could not stop. And that was just the beginning of one of the most incredible sketches presented on live television then and now you will ever see. And Reiner was a big part of making sure that sketch went on and didn't fail. And it could have failed in so many ways. And it went on beautifully. And you can bet that a lot of it was improvised. There were other times where Reiner played the straight man to Sid Caesar, playing a professor, playing someone with a unique dialect or language or attitude, and he was just terrific. And he did the same thing with Caesar on Caesar's Hour for 3 seasons. From there, he would do comedy specials. He would then work with one of the geniuses behind the scenes on your show of shows in Caesar's Hour, Mel Brooks, on his on their popular series, The 2,000-Year-Old Man. Very popular on records, TV spots, specials, etc. And then Reiner decided in the late 1950s to dive headfirst into the role of situation comedy creator. He put together a pilot for CBS called Head of the Family, where he starred as a writer for a popular variety show. It would basically be his life put in comedy terms. The pilot didn't sell. But Reiner thought, I'm not giving up on this. I'm going to make this work. And a couple of years later, he did. Because he showcased another one of his talents, his ability to be generous. His ability to give someone else the chance to star. And that someone else was Dick Van Dyke. And in 1961, after years of doing everything from hosting CBS Cartoon Theater to game shows, to comedy specials, Dick Van Dyke got his start with Mary Tyler Moore, Rose Marie, Maury Amsterdam, Richard Deacon, and yes, the man himself, Mr. Reiner, is Alan Brady, the star of the Alan Brady Show on the Dick Van Dyke Show. It almost didn't get past the first year because of low ratings, but because of such sponsor support and then viewer support, the show got that second season. And it became one of the great classics of 1960s television, and for that matter, TV of all time. And here's the thing. The Dick Van Dyke Show, with the cast, with the writing team that it had, with Reiner leading that team as executive producer and main writer, the show could have easily run 6, 7, 8, 9 years. But Reiner made the call, 5 years, we're going out on top. We're not going to have the chance to go downhill. We are leaving at our best. Some people criticized him for that, but he may end up making the right call. And it was the correct call. And I'm sure that somewhere, every day in this world, somebody is playing the Dick Van Dyke Show. Maybe more than just one somebody. And people are laughing all over the place. Van Dyke and Reiner would reteam in the early 1970s on another CBS series, The New Dick Van Dyke Show, which originally would be done from Van Dyke's home at the time in Phoenix, third season in Hollywood. And Reiner, again, was the main writer and the executive producer. And here's something you might not know. The reason why the show only ran 3 years was not because of rating problems. In fact, the ratings were starting to pick up again. But it was because Reiner had a conscience. And when CBS decided not to run one of his episodes because the censors were unhappy with an off-camera, that's right, off-camera sequence where members of Van Dyke's family catch the couple, that's Van Dyke and Hope Lang, who played his wife at the time, having sex. And remember, this is an off-camera scene. CBS said, no, Carl, we're not running it. And Reiner's answer to CBS, okay, I'm no longer involved with the show. I have a 3-year contract, so does Dick. We're gone. Because I don't want to work for CBS again. And that was the case. despite good ratings. Ratings that were growing. Reiner stuck to his guns, and he was right. From there, he continued to do variety specials, some comedy bits, and then, of course, struck up a great movie partnership with Steve Martin that created some wonderful comedy films from The Jerk, Didn't End Up Wear Plaid, and All of Me. And he also continued to expand into other mediums, like social media, Twitter, and Facebook, with his own brand of wonderful humor. And he would continue to work with Mel Brooks. He'd be there at all of when Mel Brooks had his Lifetime Achievement Tributes with the American Film Institute and other places. Guess who'd be there? Carl Reiner. Guess who'd crack the place up? Carl Reiner. Oh, one other thing. Reiner was also a game show host. In the early 1960s, he did a show for Merrill Heath and Robert Quigley called The Celebrity Game. It was actually the forerunner of the Hollywood Squares. 9 celebrities answering questions, and the contestants would have to determine whether or not the celebrity was telling the truth or not for dollars and later prizes. The show, I believe, ran 2 years as a mid-season or summer replacement, and Reiner was a terrific host. Kept it light, kept it lively, kept it going. The thing about Reiner that you have to understand is that he was so generous with his talent. He not only was a creator, a developer of talent in front of the camera, i.e. Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore and Rose Marie and Maury Amsterdam and Richard Deacon and Hope Lang and Richard Dawson, who, by the way, had a major breakthrough with that series in the new Dick Van Dyke show in the third season, but also behind the scenes. Dick Van Dyke had wonderful writers, Dan Off and Bill Persky. Bill was on our show several years ago when he had the great book, My Life in a Situation Comedy. And John Rich, who really became the Emmy-winning director of All in the Family. From first to last, Carl Reiner was not only a great solo player, but a great team player and one of the truly great TV comedy geniuses. And the wonderful thing is, we've got the Dick Van Dyke Show. We've got scenes from your show of shows, including that amazing This Is Your Life parody. I dare you not to be hysterical when you see it. And Caesar's Hour. And the new Dick Van Dyke Show, available on YouTube and other places. An incredible treasure. And he was an incredible treasure. And, of course, he still has his Twitter feed. And it's never too late to check that out. Carl Reiner. He was a comedy man for all seasons, for all years, right up to the very end, at the age of 98. When it comes to Hugh Downs, who we learned nearly 2 hours ago had passed away at the age of 99, there is a connection with Carl Reiner, because Hugh Downs was an announcer on Caesar's Hour, when it was on NBC, and in fact participated from time to time in some of the sketches that Carl Reiner and Sid Caesar, etc., were in. Hugh Downs, in his lifetime, hosted, co-hosted, announced more than, hold on to your hat, folks, 10,000 hours of live and taped television. That's worth repeating. More than 10,000 hours of live and taped television over of 6 decades. And it was a magnificent TV career. It started as the announcer in Chicago of the popular puppet series Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. Then he came to New York and he became the co-host of Home, which at the time was a groundbreaking multi-hour series aimed at American women, with Arlene Francis as one of the co-hosts. Nobody had ever done a program like that before, and Hugh Downs was part of it. And then in the late 1950s, he became the sidekick to one of the great late-night hosts of all time, Jack Parr. And at the same time, he became the host of one of the most popular game shows of all time, the Rebus game, Concentration. He was the daytime host for more than a decade, and he was also involved twice as a primetime host. In the 1960s, Downs expanded his horizons as the host of another multi-hour morning program, Today. He did that to the early 1970s, passing the baton over to Frank McGee. But he continued on television in various ways, including in the late 1970s, being the host for several years of the popular PBS series Over Easy, one of the first series to deal with issues and trends involving senior citizens or mature adults. Take your pick. He won an Emmy Award, one of the few he got for hosting that series. And then came the call from Moon Aldridge, at that time head of ABC News and Sports, saying, "Hugh, I got a problem. I have a primetime news magazine called 2020. It had a disastrous first episode. Come on in and be the co-anchor." It was a big move for Downs because he'd been living at the time in Scottsdale, Arizona, where he had to commute to San Francisco or Los Angeles to do Over Easy on PBS. And so he'd have to commute not only to New York, where 2020 was headquartered, but also all over the country, because he would also be doing assignments, just like he did for the Today Show, and like we did for Over Easy. Down stepped in with Barbara Walters as his co-host, and they made a sensational news magazine team. And 2020 was on its way to becoming one of the most popular news magazines short of 60 Minutes. And it still is. He was there on the program for more than 20 years. And he concluded his TV career more than 20 years ago in 1999. The thing that made Hugh Downs so terrific in any role he had was his curiosity. He was one of the most curious people, inquisitive people, you could ever see anywhere on this earth. And I can vouch for that because I had a chance to meet him when he was here in New York on a National Public Television fundraiser in the 1980s. At one point, I was manning the phones, along with some 30 other people, at the studios of WNET 13 here in New York on 9th Avenue in 53rd Street, later the home of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And Downs came over to talk with us. They do it several times throughout the course of the night. And I talked to him about my thoughts about television and where I was at in my career. He talked about his career. And it's like, and the thing about Hugh was that he was so there. You could tell he was, this was not just a little, you know, put it off, just a matter of speaking. I have to go ahead and talk to the phone bank people. He was really interested in what you were up to. Nothing, no topic was off his radar screen. And I could just tell from the few minutes I had with him that he was curious about the world, curious about what he was doing that night, curious about how public television worked, how TV worked. And it was a pleasure. No question was below him. None. He was one of the most knowledgeable and yet full of space for knowledge people I've ever met. He taught me something that night, which is to be inquisitive. Don't shut yourself off to people. Get to know them. Get to ask even the dumbest of questions, because maybe they're not as dumb as you think they are. Be engaged. What I now learn from Landmark is curiously engaged. And Hugh Downs had it. And I am clear that that was what made his success for those six decades of television. That great, great, great ability to be engaged fully in his subjects and in his programs. If you ever watch his programs, you'll notice that oftentimes his sign-off was not about himself. It was acknowledgement to the audience. Thank you for playing Concentration. Thank you for watching Over Easy. Thank you for watching 2020. We're in touch, so you be in touch. That became a national catchphrase. He always thanked his audience, acknowledged his audience for tuning in and hearing what he presented, or what he had to say, or what his colleagues had to say. I think the sign of a great person is that ability to acknowledge an audience that watches you, especially in any area of entertainment. And Hugh Downs had that. And it wasn't just for a decade or one program. It was for his entire career. You don't get to be part of 10,000 hours of television if you're not fully engaged with your audience. And he was. And he never took his life for granted. He never took his relationships off the screen for granted. One of the friendliest people you'll ever meet. And in a way, I'm very happy that Carl and Hugh had the chance to work together. And I'm sure they've learned a lot from each other. And if there's a lesson to be learned from these lives, these two magnificent lives that left Earth this week, it's this. The more engaged you are with life, especially as you grow mature, the better your life is. The more rewarding your life is. The more empowering your life is. The more impactful your life is. Both Carl Reiner and Hugh Downs left this earth at the top of their game. They weren't victims of Alzheimer's. They weren't victims of malaise. They weren't victims of a world that sometimes can get you to be resigned and cynical. They truly were people that were optimistic about where their comedy, their television career, and their world was going. And all of us, those of you listening now or will be listening down the road, we can all be the better for it. We are more engaged people because of it. The TV medium is better because Carl Reiner and Hugh Downs were in it, and in it to the fullest. We have a couple of minutes left. I'd love to hear from one or two of you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Let me get your thoughts about Carl Reiner and or Hugh Downs. So give the call or use our chat room. And we got a couple minutes left, so let's make it fly and let's make it count. While we're waiting, once again, we'll let you know that on Monday, we are with you 1 hour earlier than normal. That's 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific time. And again, joining us for our first half hour, this is one you will not want to miss. We'll be from the new Latinx List Project, the executive director of the National Association of Latino Independent Producers, Ben Lopez, and someone we've wanted to have in this program for several years, the founder and organizer of The Blacklist, Franklin Leonard. And that's just the first half hour. Also, we'll have Glenn Backing and Mike Spire from the new Localist series from the ABC television stations Plus Live, and David Goldberg, the executive producer of the popular new ABC game show, on tonight at 9:30 Pacific Time, Don't, from Ryan Reynolds. That's David Goldberg. That's all coming up Monday. Remember, it's 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. And then replayed later on the IR Radio Podcast Network. Once again, love to hear your thoughts about Carl Reiner and or Hugh Downs. Make the call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or use that chat room, SimonApple04. By name. And while we wait, in our remaining minutes, one more time, let's give you our classic trivia question of the week. If you're first with the correct answer, we open with a question on Monday, you will win the bestseller, A Very English Scandal by John Preston. This is a book that inspired a great miniseries last year, won a lot of awards all over the place, starring Hugh Grant. Again, A Very English Scandal by John Preston, and published by Other Press. And we'll also throw in a set of episodes of Fish Tank Kings, the popular long-running series on Nat Geo Wild. 3 episodes for you on CD. Here's the question. Name the first television series executive produced by Greg Berlanti. That's the man who does everything from The Flash and Black Lightning and All-American on the CW to You, which is currently on Lifetime. He has more than 20 television series, mostly scripted, on the air right now and a lot more projects in the works. Name the first television series executive produced by Greg Berlanti. Couple and one hint, he did it more than 20 years ago. Second hint, it was on one of the two networks that later merged to become the CW. If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And if you missed the question, we'll post tomorrow morning on Facebook at my Simon Applebaum page. And we'll post it on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So get in there and all the right back. And if you've won before, please let somebody else win. Make their 4th of July a great one, okay? Have them come up with the answer and get it in by email. Remember, we accept email answers only. So make sure you use that form and make sure when you email, you enclose your name and your full mailing address so we can get the prize out to you ASAP. Once again, I want to thank all of our guests for being here today. And again, I want to thank our free guests from Series Fest 2020 who are with us both today and on Monday's episode. If you want to see all of the 60-plus independent pilots in this year's Series Fest 2020 competition, including all the winners, go to www.seriesfest.com. That's www.seriesfest.com. And once again, we're back on Monday, special time, hour earlier than normal, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, with the people involved with the new Latinx List project, which also involves Hulu, Ben Lopez, the executive director of the National Association of Latino Independent Producers, and a rare live interview anywhere, the founder and organizer of The Blacklist, Franklin Leonard, plus the executive producer of ABC's popular new game show Tonight, Don't, David Goldberg, and from the new Localish series, plus live executive producers Brent Zaki and Mike Spire. If you came in late off today's program or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, you can do so throughout this entire July 4th holiday weekend. Just go to our homepage when you like. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast. It's available on iTunes, Apple TV, Spreaker Podcast app, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio.com. On those latter two websites, put Tamavi Televised in the search bar, click, and you're in. We'd love to hear your thoughts about today's program, and I'd still like to hear your thoughts about the careers of Carl Reiner and Hugh Downs. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, find me on Facebook, and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. I do respond within 24 hours, and there's a very short reason why, because what you say matters, now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate is Mandolin. Andy Toad is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Steinberg, head of content. The co-founders of Zenterprise are Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Will Be Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free audio book, wellness materials, and now U.S. newspapers of your choice, it's audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow Will Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. All of us at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network wish all of you a wonderful, sensational July 4th Independence Day weekend. Please keep in mind why we have that holiday and why it's important now more than ever to save it. At the same time, if you're celebrating, please follow those guidelines and let this pandemic once and forever. We will be back on Monday, hour earlier again. Remember the new special time, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Wherever you are up to this July 4th holiday weekend, please, can't say it enough, make it safe, make it great, and we will lift this pandemic now and forever. Until next time, stay well, stay tuned, and in the words of Hugh Downs, thank you for listening to Tomorrow Will Be Televised.